Hello and welcome to Radio Retail with me, your host, William Madison. I'm speaking to you today from the Form Rooms on 22 Tower Street, our brand new offices here at the BRC. The Form Rooms will be a bit of a home for retail in central London going forward. We'll be hosting lots of events, forums, and a lot more as we move into what is an exciting new chapter. But down to the podcast. Today, I'm talking to Scott Lindsay from ESW about emerging markets that could provide exciting prospects for retailers. We also talk to our own James Hardiman about the explosion of inflation we're seeing across the world. But first, let's get to the retail rundown. The retail rundown is our regular segment where we have a look at some of our exclusive monitors and reports coming out of the BRC. This gives us an overview of some of the trends we're seeing in UK retail. Unsurprisingly, this week, ahead of our chat with James, we'll be looking at our shop price index, where once again, shop prices continue to rise for the fifth consecutive month. We're expecting that this inflation continues, as we feel that many of the factors influencing prices up and down the supply chain have not been fully felt yet. Breaking this down with some year-on-year comparisons, we saw all prices increase by 2.1% for March. That's up from 1.8% in February. That's also the highest rate that we've seen since September 2011. Non-food is up 1.5%, also the highest since September 2011, with food prices increasing by 3.3% year-on-year, the highest since March 2013. Within food, fresh food was up 3.5%, with ambient food up 3%, both the highest since that March 2013 mark. That's what we're going to be covering here in the Retail Rundown, but to continue to burrow into these very important inflationary figures, we're now going to turn to our conversation with our very own James Hardiman. And I'm joined now by James Hardiman, Senior Analyst here at the BRC. James, how are you going?
Hi, Will. I'm doing good, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, very well, very well. So, James, everyone at the moment is talking about inflation, and so I wanted to get a handle on just how bad the situation is. Where is overall inflation currently, and how does that compare to historic levels?
The ONS has got consumer price inflation at 5.5% at the moment, and that was for February. So, looking back, no, that's the highest since 1992, so it's pretty unprecedented, really, especially since the economy has developed so much since then. We've generally had low inflation levels pretty much consistently since the financial crisis back in 2008, so it's pretty uncharted waters at the moment.
There's so much to talk about here, but what are some of the major factors that we're seeing that are driving this rise?
The coronavirus had a huge impact on this, since virtually all of the economies, you know, shrunk and slowed down their activity in 2020. Since everything's been reopening back in, throughout 2021 and to where we are now, a lot of the demand has increased sort of straight away, but supply chains have been slow to catch up. So that's created quite the imbalance, which is driving up prices. You've still got lots of supply chain issues across the world, particularly in the Far East. Now with the coronavirus sort of flaring up again on that side of the world. So that's impacting production quite heavily and logistics and getting the goods to this country as well. There's also, since last year, there's been labor shortages as well, which is driving up costs to producers. So on the food side, from farmhands and things like that, to much publicized delivery and heavy goods vehicles drivers shortages that we've had in this country as well. So it seems like, in a way, that every possible avenue, there's price increases into the production chain. So it's multifaceted, just put it that way.
Presumably a lot of what we're seeing at the moment, for listeners, I'm not sure if anyone was on one of our trade calls not too long ago with Aidan, but there's also the impact of everything that's happening in Ukraine, right? The impact on wheat, which has a roll-on effect on agriculture and bread prices and all these kinds of things as well. Is that playing much of a part?
Yeah, the immediate factors will take a while to play out. So for the average consumer, yes, they will have faced higher sort of prices at the pumps for their fuel and things like that. But the energy prices hasn't really filtered through yet. Also for major companies, they'll have longer term contracts. So while these sort of things is not immediately impacting as much as it will do over the next coming months. So that will play out over the next year, probably. Because, yes, in March, worldwide oil prices spiked to over $130 per barrel. But then they came down, and it's a very volatile price at the moment, which is going to have an impact on the prices going forward, because oil pretty much finds its way into, you know, every supply chain. Or energy is required for virtually every process within the economy. So we can't avoid that. On the food side, wheat production and sunflower oil production in Ukraine and in Russia as well will drive up plant prices quicker, but we're not seeing that as yet in the figures. We'll have to look forward to that.
And how much are we expecting this to actually impact consumers and consumer spending?
It will lead to a rebalancing from consumer spending. So from more discretionary spending towards the essentials. Food prices have been going up and will go up more in the future. That's an essential item. People will spend whatever it takes to feed their family. But then that money will have to come from somewhere, and it's on the discretionary side, which will take a severe hit. And that will take a severe hit to bills as well, so not just to food reselling. So everything will take a hit as people trade down and go for cheaper options of things they bought before. There will be less of what they buy overall, but this will particularly hit discretionary spending, so fashion, electronics, things like that.
And what's the long-term outlook looking like? Obviously, from what you've said already, it doesn't particularly sound positive to say the least, but are these levels of inflation likely to hang around or maybe get worse?
No, that's the million-dollar question, I guess. It's not easy to predict the future. At the best of times, it's even more difficult when there's such high volatility, and also we don't really have much historic precedent to base anything on, because one, we've got the pandemic, we've got labor shortages, and we've got an energy crisis with an invasion in Europe. So all of these coming together, it's very, very difficult to put even a time limit on when these sort of current pressures will ease at all. I think the Russia situation will probably dictate that. It'll take time for that sort of thing to unwind, and for Ukraine to ramp up production again when this is all over.
So uncertainty basically is the answer there.
Yeah. And it's very, way too early to tell. Another couple of editions of the podcast, and then maybe we'll have that.
Sure. Idea. All right. Well, we'll get you back on in a couple more and see if we've got some answers. But otherwise, thanks very much for coming on the podcast, James.
Anytime, Will. Thank you.
Our thanks to James there for coming on the podcast. We're now going to turn to our discussion with Scott Lindsay of ESW. Emerging markets are always something on the mind of retailers, how to explore untapped potential in more unexpected and less obvious markets around the world, and the imperative to do so is becoming greater than ever. But it can be a challenging opportunity to approach, and the scale of the problem can sometimes seem overwhelming. I talked to Scott to find out where retailers should be looking, and the kinds of factors we should be considering. I hope you enjoy the discussion. And I'm joined now by Scott Lindsay, VP of Marketing EMEA at ESW. Scott, thanks for joining me on the podcast.
Great. Thanks, Will. Good to be here.
So today we're going to be talking a little bit about emerging markets, perhaps those regions or countries where retailers could find a little bit of untapped potential and how they should be approaching them. This has obviously become a pretty pertinent issue more recently. So let's start here and set the scene. What's the case for retailers exploring emerging markets, and why is it so important? Why should retailers be acting now?
Yeah, well, it's a good place to start. I think maybe if we cast our minds back a number of years, probably, let's say 10 years ago, I think selling internationally reasonably meant just, do you ship internationally? And I think that was kind of the jumping off point for a lot of brands, particularly in the US, but also in the UK and on some other kind of global powerhouse brand markets as such, where they started to notice the online demand for their brands coming from other countries, traffic from other countries and so on. And the immediate ask, I suppose, was can you ship internationally? When you consider a domestic e-commerce transaction, it's a far more simple proposition than an international sale. So I think brands quickly found out that there's a lot of complications around when you ship something to a customer, they get notified that they have to pay duties and taxes. If they don't agree to pay them, then how do you get the goods back to the originating market? And there was a lot of different problems that needed to be solved. So the company that I work with, ESW, I suppose, exists to solve lots of those problems. But without going into that in detail, I guess over time, domestic growth in e-commerce slowed down. When you think of the likes of the UK and I suppose the US and so on, they are huge e-commerce markets. Everybody has moved online, but the growth that's available is a lot smaller in terms of percentage terms than might be available in some of the emerging and international markets that are out there. But selling into those markets, you know, brings its own set of problems. So you can chase the growth, but you've got to do it in a way that meets the expectations of shoppers in those markets. So I think that was with the last 2 years that we've gone through in terms of the epidemic. Also, as we said, Brexit in the UK and the challenges that has positioned for retailers in the UK. Casting your mind to international markets is a very important consideration in terms of finding that growth. The high street has been through a terrible time in the UK, particularly over the last 3 or 4 years. And I think those brands that are geared up, are advanced on their digital transformation, are already selling into those markets and are offering a great customer experience, are the ones that are continuing to grow and thrive in what are particularly challenging times. So I think the imperative has never been greater. I think the recent events of the pandemic were in many ways existential for a lot of brands. A lot of companies went under. And I think, again, we actually did an exercise last year or the year before, in fact, not long after the pandemic broke out. And we tried to track the recovery in share price of some of the biggest brands around the world, given the initial hit that happened when the pandemic hit, and match it to how diverse they were globally in terms of where their traffic came and so on. And we found a very, very strong correlation between the geographic diversity of brands and their ability to recover and trade strongly after the pandemic. So I think it's an existential question. It's a growth question and one that really every brand should be thinking about.
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose the other thing there is the what we've seen recently, the sort of wave of retailers pulling out of Russia as well makes this particularly relevant. But I know also in doing that, some retailers have faced some challenges. So what are some of those challenges maybe that retailers might face when shifting their focus from existing to those sort of new markets?
Yeah, so I think you got to put yourself in the mind of the consumer. To take a step back a little bit, social media has been a huge driver of all of this internationalization and globalization. And if you consider every person in the world, more or less, and particularly those in the younger generations, has a walking billboard in their pocket. And we're able to access them as consumers at any time of the day with any messaging that we want, showcasing our brands, showcasing our products, our brand voice, our promise to them. But quite often where it then falls down is, well, how do I follow through on that in terms of serving that demand? How do I deliver that brand promise to somebody in some far-flung place in the world as opposed to somebody that's in my own domestic country? So I think you got to start from the point of the consumer. You're able to deliver the glossy messaging. So how do you deliver a transactional and an experiential kind of interaction with them that fits the purpose of your brand? How do they like to pay? What way do they like to view the prices? Are the prices, we all know that if we go to the US, of course, you know, you see the sticker price on the goods that you're buying, but then when you bring it to the counter, you're going to have taxes added on. That's not something that we're familiar with in European countries for the most part. But it's not just that simple. There are some countries that like to see taxes at checkout. There are some that like to see it built into the product price. There are some that like to see the import price or fees in the product price, but then the tax added on at a future point in the checkout. So there's a lot of complication around that. Obviously, there's the currency piece. How do people like to pay? Do they want to use credit or debit cards? Do they want to use something like a wallet? Is it an express payment method? Is it something that's particular to that country only? What are the delivery preferences? How do you return goods? You know, it's not a good experience for somebody in Australia to have to return something to the UK and wait maybe 6 or 8 weeks to, first of all, find out if their return actually arrived in the UK, but then to get their refund. So how do you ensure that you can refund on injection into the local postal system, have it returned to a local return center over there? How do you serve customer service in a timely fashion? There are many, many different considerations. And I suppose if you bundle them all together, it's what you call localization. How do you localize and create a domestic equivalent experience for consumers, regardless of where they are? So start from the mind of the consumer, and then try to build an experience that matches what they would expect if they were trading with a domestic retailer.
Right. So, okay. So there's quite a few things there for people to consider. So if I'm putting myself in the mind of the retailer, what are the kinds of things that I should be evaluating in that market? What's maybe an obvious indicator that a particular region or maybe a particular country might be beneficial for my business, or inversely, the red flags maybe that I should be looking for?
Sure. Well, I think it starts with data. You've got to, first of all, understand, do you have brand awareness in a particular country? Are you seeing traffic on your website from a particular country? Are you serving ads in those countries? Do you have an existing store presence in those countries? Do you have partners or wholesale partners, reseller partnerships in those countries? And if so, how do you join the dots with all of that? The direct-to-consumer model, I suppose, is very, very beneficial to the extent that you own that relationship with the shopper. You own all of the data points on the journey. You're able to really understand what's driving behavior, how that behavior differs in different parts of the world. Something that's lost, I think, when people work with marketplaces, and listen, there's a time and place for marketplaces, but it is that kind of understanding and control over the customer journey, the fact that your products are being displayed alongside those of your competitors, that it's often a race to the bottom, and even the high margins that are charged by marketplaces. That being said, there are some countries in the world where selling through a marketplace is an absolute no-brainer. That is how consumers like to shop in those markets. So you've got to use the marketplace model. So really start with data. Is there demand? How difficult is it for you to sell into that country? Some countries are more challenging than others to sell into and have different kind of import-export requirements. Some have simplified clearance processes for goods, different thresholds that attract duty and taxes and so on. Obviously, the likes of a language difference, you know, if you're a UK brand, well, then you don't have to translate everything for an Australian or a US or an Irish market even. So you can think about those as being easy wins. Look at the payment methods that are going to get you most of the way in that country. People have a habit, or brands, I think, have a habit of trying to consider every payment method that's possibly available in a market just because they want to reach everybody. But quite often those cannibalize each other. They're also not all equal when it comes to things like refunds, offering full refunds and so on. So I think it's about matching internal competencies and understandings and knowledge within your own company and matching those to the requirements of each country. So are you ready to start advertising or building marketing or brand awareness in a different language, in a different country, through a different kind of ecosystem and different social media apps? Or can you start with the easier wins, which are those that you're already familiar with and so on?
So what are some of the examples of markets that you feel might be currently undervalued? So the areas that retailers maybe should be keeping an eye on, and I suppose from there, exploring for potential investment.
Yeah, good question. We see, and actually we do a report a number of times a year called Global Voices that focuses on many of what we consider to be the key markets around the world in terms of size, in terms of geographical dispersion and so on. I suppose the ones that stand out that are maybe non-typical would be the likes of Mexico. Mexico has huge demand and exposure, particularly to US brands, but also I think there's an opportunity for UK brands to really build a presence over there. It's a tricky market in terms of how people like to shop. There's a huge amount of, for example, over-the-counter payments, where there's something like OXXO, which is a grocery store network over there, is used to deliver goods to, and so on. So there's some intricacies in Mexico, but it's a burgeoning market with a large population. I think the other place to look is, you know, we look to Asia and we see obviously the growth in China, it dwarfs everything else, or rather the market size, I should say, in China dwarfs everything else. But a lot of the other markets in Asia are maybe faster growing and have, you know, more opportunities. So the likes of Indonesia, the likes of Vietnam, Thailand, Malaysia, Singapore, these are all very, very strong markets within that region that, you know, are very much worth considering. India, of course, is again a kind of tricky one, but one that I think that should be explored. An enormous population, obviously, and within that, then there are obviously cohorts that are very kind of brand savvy, that have a lot of kind of upwardly mobile status type driven behaviors that are important to be considering and thinking about as target markets for sure.
Great. And I think that's where we'll leave the discussion for today. If you're interested in finding out more about that report, the Global Voices report, there is a link down in the show notes. There's also another relevant report there, just in case anyone is interested in these topics or more. But otherwise, Scott, thank you very much for joining me on the podcast.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. Thanks for your time and thanks for the opportunity.
And our thanks to Scott there for coming on the podcast. As I mentioned in the interview, you can find links below to both of those reports. It's such a broad subject and there's a lot to learn on the topic, so really great resources for those looking to understand more. And with that, we've come to the end of this episode of Radio Retail. I want to thank our guests once again for coming on the podcast. If you're enjoying these podcasts, please rate and subscribe wherever you may listen to your podcasts. If you want to find out more about the work that we do here at the BRC, you can visit us at brc.org.uk. And if you want to get in touch about future episodes, you can contact me at william.madison@brc.org.uk. Other than that, I want to thank you for joining me on the podcast and hope to see you next time on Radio Retail. Goodbye for now.